Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. I am your alchemist, and I am always joined by the co-host, who is the creative. And we made The Creative Alchemist so that we can talk about your business needs. Yes, your business, or the business you'd like to create. And we discuss many topics, from your money, from your leadership, to your accounting, to your clients. And tonight, well, we're going to talk about what it's like to do business internationally. And sometimes you can do somewhat of an international business in your own country. We're going to talk about that also. And we come to you every Thursday from 7 p.m. until 8. So if this is your first time joining us, make sure you follow us on Blog Talk Radio under The Creative Alchemist, and you'll get notifications every time that we do a show, every time that show is set up. So tonight we're going to have a guest, as we always do. And before we introduce our guest, you have to meet my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
Hello, everyone, and it's nice to be back. It's Lori Miller, interior designer. So before I go and introduce our lovely guest, I'm just going to remind people that we have a fundraiser. I'm running for Woman of the Year for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. If you'd like to donate, and we'd love it if you would, just go to Woman of the Year, Lori Miller, and the fundraising page should pop up. We have all kinds of shows and tickets to concert events. If you want to see Creedence Clearwater Revival from the comfort of your own home, it's on Zoom May 15th at 8 p.m. There's tickets for that. We have sweatshirts and T-shirts and wine huddlers and all kinds of fun things. So stay tuned, and we hope that you donate and help us fight cancer. And tonight's guest is Wendy. She's the president of Rapport International. And I'm going to let Wendy tell you a little bit about her business, and maybe Wendy will be able to do this in another language. Hello, Wendy, and thank you for joining us tonight.
buenas noches.
Buenas noches.
Yeah, how many of your listeners are speaking another language? My guess is that they all want to hear it in English.
I don't know. So. Maybe we'll have some callers in and see what languages they speak.
Oh, I'd love to have that. If there's any callers, definitely, you know, listeners who speak another language, call in and let us know what language. Yeah, so if you haven't guessed, I love languages and cultures and travel, and that led me to become owner of Rapport International, where we connect people across languages and cultures by providing high-quality written translation and spoken interpretation services. So thank you so much for having me here this evening.
That was a
thank
pleasure.
You for being
Thanks
our
for
guest.
Joining us. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you said you did
so
a lot
you've
of traveling.
Also...
Yep.
Go ahead.
Go yeah, ahead. You said you did a lot of traveling.
Yes. When I was young, I lived in Mexico, Taiwan, and the Philippines. Since my dad was in international agriculture and, you know, traveling, living over there, we traveled to all sorts of different places. And so my love of travel started very young, and I continue to do it and pass that love down to my kids who are now I've got two sons, one's 17 and one is almost 20, and so they've been to a lot of different countries and definitely have the travel bug. And maybe
well,
sometime
curious.
Soon we'll
live?
Actually, I lived in La Ciudad de Mexico, you know, Mexico City. I lived in a small farming village in Taiwan called Shenhua, and I lived in Los Baños in the Philippines.
Cool. You know, I lived in Acapulco.
Ah, right. Yes, we vacationed there.
Yeah, for almost 2 years. Yep, I lived in a section called Caleta. So, yes,
nice.
I know Mexico well. Almost 2 years.
I love Mexico.
So how'd you? I was going to ask you. Good. Mexico is a great place. And after 2 years, I was able to drink the water.
Oh, were you really?
I drank it by accident, and I was there for a year, I guess, brushing your teeth and, you know, washing your face, rinsing your mouth. After a while, your body made an adjustment, and I drank the water. And the crazy thing, when I came back to the States, I couldn't drink the water in the U.S.
Wow.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I became a Mexican. Mexicano.
Well, I remember when I was in my 20s, I went on vacation to Mexico with my parents. And, you know, we were careful. We were drinking bottled water. We were only there a short time. And one evening I was brushing my teeth and, you know, I was just thirsty. So I took a glass and I filled it up and I started drinking. And then my eyes focused in the cup and there were little things swimming around. I was like, oh, no. And I got sick when I got home, but the trip was worth it.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, hey, Wendy, you've also written a book.
Yes.
Can you tell us about the book, the name of the book, the subject, and what made you write it?
Sure, yes. The book is called The Language of Global Marketing. And it's about translating your domestic strategies into international sales and profits. And you can buy it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of the places you find your books. And I am so appreciative of any reviews. So if anybody's interested, please, please tell me what you think. I wrote it because less than 1% of U.S. companies export. And of those, 98% of them are small and mid-sized businesses. And the companies that do export have higher revenues, higher profits, they pay their employees more, they're more stable, they're more valuable, and they actually protect their domestic market stronger. And so to encourage companies to export in the U.S., the federal and state governments provide free counseling, introductions, and even money. They provide grants to help people go international, and part of that is translation. So when I was getting on the phone with a lot of companies and they were asking a lot of the same questions, I thought, there really isn't a resource that people can go to learn how to market across languages. You know, how do you handle that? The other books that were up there on global marketing on Amazon when I was doing the research were textbooks. So you had to spend like $55 to $70 to get a book. So this is more price for, you know, the business user that wants to access this information. And I loaded in with a stories about living in Taiwan that make a point, and I have a story in there about my mom and my dad, and I've got, you know, Google Translate mistakes that people have done in there. So the feedback I'm getting is that there's enough stories in there to keep it entertaining yet give practical advice for people who want to market across languages.
Right, give them some facts and some real things to chew on so they can make better decisions.
Yes, and it talks about the opportunities in different countries and the statistics and how you decide to where to go. So I had a lot of fun writing it, and I'm, you know, I want to hear from people to hear if they think it's valuable, if I, you know, was able to answer questions that people might have.
Well, the U.S., our largest trading partner is Canada, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
It's easy because primarily they speak English, except for that a Providence, Quebec.
Quebec, yeah.
Where it's French, but it's bilingual. They still speak English, but it's bilingual.
Yeah,
so
but there's mandatory packaging rules. There is mandatory packaging laws, so we do a lot of French translation for companies that are marketing up in Canada.
Oh, no kidding. Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So they have to be bilingual then when you have packaging selling in Canada.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And is this mandatory or it's optional?
It's mandatory, and I don't know if that's – I think it's just in the French-speaking area. I don't think it's across the whole country, but I'm not sure on that. I always meant to go back and look at that. But, yeah,
okay.
You have to
–
particularly here in New England when you're going up north, you want to make sure that your packaging is bilingual. But my thing is if you're doing a package for North America – why not put French, Spanish, and English on it from the start? Because in the United States, the second largest Spanish-speaking market in the world is in the United States.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it fascinating that you don't even have to leave the borders of the United States and you can access a whole other country just by targeting buyers who speak Spanish. Yeah.
Right. And here in New York, in Jersey, I live in Jersey, there are parts of Jersey, a woman was telling me, she went in the store in this town and she had a difficult time because they didn't speak English well, they spoke Spanish. So you can find this, you can, believe it or not, have this dilemma. In New York, you have Spanish Harlem. You have parts of Manhattan where people don't even have to learn English. They just speak Spanish. So if you want to do business with those people, it sounds like what you're saying is you have to speak their language.
Absolutely. I mean, you lived in Acapulco for 2 years. You probably speak Spanish pretty good. But if you have a choice to go to an English or a Spanish website, where would you go?
Well,
I'm assuming English is your native
English language. Right. I would still go to English. Right.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, in the United States, we used to be the melting pot where people would come in here and they'd push away their culture and want to learn English and assimilate as quickly as possible. But that's changed. People now come in and they want to keep their culture. So just go to Spanish-speaking TV and you can see all the big brands, you know, not even just big brands. There's local brands that advertise there too because people want to keep their culture and their language.
I live in a part of New Jersey where you'll see billboards in Korean.
Yes.
So
there's
a big Korean
surprised.
Population. Yep. And you see a ton of billboards in this one area, and they're in Korean. Some in English, but you see a lot of Korean.
Right. So imagine, you know, you have a little store down in that area, the edge of it. You hang a store, you know, a sign there that says something in Korean, like even just welcome, you're going to bring more foot traffic in because people are going to want to go to a place where they feel safe. And I've seen even like insurance salespeople, you know, like your homeowner's insurance or your car insurance, make even if they're just English speaking, they might hire somebody that speaks Spanish, but then they provide services in language, any of the information and documentation, and they can dramatically increase their business.
Exactly. So I lived in D.C. for a while, and there was a major regional bank in Washington, D.C., and there was this area of D.C. where Koreans were starting to move in rather heavily. And there was this Korean credit union, and they were financing everything, cars, houses, businesses.
Yeah.
Whatever you wanted, the credit union was financing everything. It was Korean. And the regional bank was a U.S. bank, and they wanted to penetrate the Korean market, they flopped. They couldn't touch it. So they had to do what you're saying. They had to hire Korean representatives. They had to have documents translated into Korean. And slowly they started to penetrate that demographic, and it was a very lucrative demographic. The Koreans ended up buying this whole section of warehouses, it was wholesalers. And, you know, 1 year, it was Irish and Italian, and then 2 years later, all the wholesalers were owned by Koreans, and the regional bank had no way of penetrating until they did what you just said.
Yes. Yeah, and that's something that, you know, in the popular press we see, oh, illegal immigration and people coming over the border and that, but the majority of immigrants are here legally, and many of them are very highly educated. I mean, they're coming in and getting a lot of the advanced degrees or coming with advanced degrees in science and technology. So there's a lot of disposable income that is available if you just think about how people want to consume information and provide it to sell your services or products.
Right, right. So, you know, interesting, you lived in Mexico, so did I. You have a translation company, so did I. I worked for one, and then I had one of my own. So, boy, we have a lot in common here, huh?
I know. I love that. I love learning that on Clubhouse. And so I do have to pick your brain. I got a couple questions about running a translation agency, but I don't think we'll do it right now while we're live.
No.
But I love the overlap. We're going to have to meet sometime in person.
Absolutely. So we just talked about how if I were to do business, even though I lived in Mexico, I'd prefer to do contracts in English, my native language. So I assume that's the case for a lot of people. And what about people who've been here for like one generation? Like, how does that work? How should people think about that if they want to penetrate non-English speaking markets just in the U.S.?
Yeah, so I thought you were going to go a different angle with contracts. But, yeah, okay, so if you want to target non-English speakers in the U.S., first you've got to think about what your strategy is for your company. I mean, are there certain products or services that you're selling, and what, you know, geographic markets are you going to target? You know, and I like talking about the town next to me. I wouldn't do it in Spanish. They've got a big Spanish population, but their primary, there's a lot of people, I shouldn't say primary, but they've got a lot of Brazilian Portuguese people who live there.
Mm.
So if my strategy was to increase sales in the Marlborough, Massachusetts market, I would look around to see if the communities would buy the services and how to get some influencers or where to be, or, you know, it so much depends. But I always say start with your strategy. It's got to start with your corporate strategy. Make sure your marketing strategy aligns, and then look at your multilingual strategy to make sure they all align. Then you can think about the process and the technology and the quality of language services that you're going to need to tap in, because, you know, somebody who runs a grocery store is going to have much different language needs than somebody who's running an insurance agency.
Right. Yep, Massachusetts has the largest Brazilian population in the U.S.
Really? Now that's something new. I didn't know that. Huh.
E eu falo português também. I speak Portuguese.
I'm sorry, what did
also.
You say?
I said in
Portuguese.
I speak Portuguese as well.
Yeah, and see, we have a large Portuguese population from Portugal also. And the Portuguese, you know, people who speak the Portuguese in each of those countries can understand each other, but the written Portuguese is very different. So we've had to work a lot with the state of Massachusetts, and we've had to talk to them about, you know, how difficult, you can't really use one Portuguese translation. So then we have to think about the content and who they're targeting.
Brazilians eat letters. Brazilians just eat letters. They're like, oh, we don't really pronounce, use this letter when we say a word, so let's just throw it away. let's shorten it.
Let's just eat it.
They literally just eat letters and throw them away. And the the Portuguese keep the spelling. So it's interesting. And the pronunciation is different. But Portuguese, they know when they're speaking to a Brazilian. They're like, oh, okay, you're Brasileño.
Yeah.
You pronounce it. We understand. So.
Well, that's just like, you know, somebody from the U.S., somebody from Jersey talking to somebody from New England or the U.S. and U.K. Or
hey, forget about it. Hey.
Hey, Ted, you're wicked smart. What's forget about it mean?
Okay, we'll go to the party. We'll park the car. Did I say it right, the right way?
Yeah, it sounds good to me, but I'm not a native New Englander, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
so
one I learned recently that I really liked is over in the UK, they'll say, oh, I'm quite chuffed. Have you ever heard that before?
No, I haven't, no. What does
quite
that mean?
No, what does that mean, chuffed?
Quite pleased. So
oh.
I'm quite chuffed with this interview.
Interesting.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
I never knew that
Lori,
one before until recently.
I'm going to take a step back before I take us down this path of my questions.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to hear your questions, Lori. So I'm already inside. I like this industry, so I can get carried away. I'll have Wendy talking shop, and then no one will understand us. So,
yeah, what I would be fascinated to know is what's the interior design market like across different countries in the world.
Interesting. Yeah, and that would be very interesting. Obviously, styles are different, currencies are different. Even from state to state, it doesn't appear that a lot of the other states are having the same difficulties that we're having in terms of supply chain. But it would be interesting to see, now with COVID, right, everybody's doing e-design services. And we can literally take a space and, design it while on the computer without going there. So it would be interesting to see how your translation services could be used, in that sort of a capacity. And then how do you tap into that market?
Right. Well, you could see, Boston designer, New York designer, get that American look in your house. Or, you'd have to, I don't know, American cowboy look.
Yeah.
The out west is popular, the western type of thing is popular,
mm-hmm.
but how you could position yourself so you become a designer known in certain segments or population. Yeah. I mean, we provide interpreters on Zoom, so if somebody wants to have a Zoom meeting, you
well,
can put an
cool.
interpreter on. Yeah. Yeah, it's
that
really
would be
easy.
Huge. A lot of us do the vacation homes, whether it's in Puerto Rico or Mexico or, right? So, having that translation to relay what you want from the carpenter or the contractor or the tile layer or interpreting your drawings on a Zoom would be amazing.
Oh, my gosh, I never even thought about that, but right, because you've got to talk to the homeowner, but then also relay that to shopkeepers and carpenters and all the other people, yeah. Yeah, so there's Zoom interpreters, there's telephone interpreters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you'd want to use technology on that, because I can imagine as you're trying to get across a feeling when you're trying to describe that to one of your suppliers or colors, you want to have more accuracy than what translation can give you. Huh.
Well, don't some people just use like Google or you know one of the local online translation services?
Yeah.
Don't they use that? What happens when they use that?
Well, it doesn't capture the meaning. I've got all sorts of examples. I just wrote an article about Google Translate that's going to release soon. It's for the startup magazine in the UK. But, you know, one of my another new word that I learned recently was yokomeshi. It's a Japanese word that captures that struggle when you're trying to speak a foreign language. You know, we don't have a similar word. So I thought, oh, I wonder what Google tells me it says. And I popped it in there, and it says horizontal.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so the meaning's completely off. But, you know, another
so
favorite.
Wild.
Pardon?
That's so wild.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also, I mean, saudade. Do you know what that means, Ted?
Saudade.
Portuguese. Saudade, yeah.
Sure, yes, help.
Yeah, but the other word that kind of means that nostalgic missing of a time or place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some,
but if you put
like
it
in English, go ahead. You put it into a translator.
Google Translator, and it says health, but the word it also means like that nostalgic missing or reminiscing of a time that was very fun. And you know, we don't use nostalgic, or we don't have an equivalent to it.
Right. And
yeah.
That's a challenge by itself. There are things that are not always easily translatable or almost can't be translated. So.
Right. Yeah, and it's like nails on a chalkboard to me when I see a website that puts the Google Translate plugin in. I just, it's, there's so many problems with it. I mean, first off, people usually bury it down on the bottom, so your readers are never going to find it. If they do, they have to put the drop-down menu in, you know, look at the drop-down menu, and oftentimes those languages aren't translated. Like it'll say simplified Chinese in English. I mean, what Chinese speaker is going to know how to navigate to that? Then if by chance they do, when they get to the page, they're going to have bad translations. So they're going to get the gist of what it means, but they're not going to get the true meaning. And so you're going to lose people. I mean, it's a waste of time. Oh, and then the other thing that I've heard is that because Google Translate is artificial intelligence, it's duplicate content from your original website. So the Google search engine will show it, you know, will read it as duplicate content. So it could hurt your search engines. So don't use the Google Translate plugin. I mean, it's you know, it's much better to put a microsite or a landing page. You don't have to do your whole site. You start with that and then test and measure before you expand to the whole site.
Yeah, and I really like the idea. What, you know, Lori, you were saying, if you have a client that has a home in, they're in Puerto Rico and they're more comfortable speaking in Spanish to explain what they want, and you can do everything on the computer to have an interpreter. You need, the interpreter can be in Denver, you can be in New York, and the client is in Puerto Rico on a Zoom call.
Exactly.
And it's all done efficiently. And that way it avoids any misinterpretation from an AI translation or they're trying to struggle in English. It just makes it easier. They can speak their own language, and then you work with the interpreter to make sure you're giving them exactly what they want.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think it's brilliant. So how did you how did you start the company? Like, we know why, right? That's a passion. But the how,
right.
And how do you even go about getting this, the word out?
Well, I didn't start it. The company's been around for 34 years. I was laid off on maternity leave, and I was looking for my next step, and I wanted to own my own company, but I didn't have any ideas of what to start. And somebody mentioned, well, why don't you buy a business? And I still remember kind of laughing, going, yeah, with what money? But, you know, those little seeds get planted in your brain, and I started daydreaming. And I went online and found this little translation company for sale. And as you picked up on, I'm passionate about it. I met with the owner. She was ready to move on. I was very blessed, and it was the first company that I looked at and was interested in. Usually,
wow.
I think the statistic is you look at 100 before you buy one. And this was 17 years ago, and I still love what I do. We've grown it. I've got a great team right now. So that's how I got into the language industry.
That's awesome. And so now we know you bought an existing business, but you were successful, right? Because how many people buy an existing business and then run it to the ground? So how did you grow it?
Well, my background is all in marketing and sales. And so I started out with reaching out to the current clients that she had, building relationships with those, asking for referrals. At the time, websites were becoming the big thing, so I put together a website. I built out a CRM. We started email marketing. We're all over social media now. So if anybody's listening to this and you like the, you know, like the Quite Chuffed or the Yoko Meshi, you know, stories like that, follow me on LinkedIn. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, we post stuff up there all the time on language and culture because it's fascinating. So, you know, we do social media, we do networking, we do belong to groups. I sit on the board at the Greater Boston Convention and Visitors Bureau, wrote the book because I do a lot of speaking on these topics, love to be on podcasts. So, you know, my mission now is to get the word out that the global market is accessible. And particularly during COVID, we see how connected we are in two ways, one through the virus and the other is through technology.
Right. Right.
Very cool. So what board? I'm fascinated by people who sit on boards. So I'm just wondering, like, what type of boards do you sit on and, like, actively participate, or what do you do for them?
Yeah, the only board I'm on right now, and I call it a board, but it's actually, it might be officially called a committee, but it's the Multicultural Committee for the Greater Boston Convention and Visitor Bureau, and
right.
It was founded, I don't know, 10 or 20 years ago to help bring visibility to the diverse richness that we have in Boston and encourage visitors, diverse visitors from around the U.S. and the world to come to Boston and see what's there. So they've just launched a new website that has a whole inclusion area on there. So you just have to overlook the Google Translate plugin that's still there because that's in phase two of the website.
Mm-hmm.
But there's all sorts of stuff with, you know, there's just ton for every group, every affinity group that you want to come into and all the different neighborhoods. So that's been fun to just keep the focus on making sure that all groups are included and heard and given visibility, and then welcoming people to Boston.
Very cool. Yeah, I think it's awesome. I mean, and look, you found the place that actually represents what you do, too. So
yes.
That's, you know, huge, for sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Yeah.
Impressive.
So
that's a great group of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Ted.
Well, I was going to ask if a company wants to go global, how do they even start that? Or is it just easy? You just build a website, have you do all the translations, and if they need a Zoom call in French or Japanese or Portuguese, they hire you. Is it just that simple?
It can be that simple. We have a client that I'm giving you an example of a simple one, and then I'll give you an example of more difficult. We have a client that provides high-end research services to electronics manufacturers to see what consumer electronics are selling well. You know, so highly specialized, and he was getting inquiries in from China. And so he reached out, and he's like, I want to translate emails because I want to find out what they're asking and then provide services because they can buy right through the Internet, through his site, and they can get the data and they can understand it. But he was having that hiccup in the sales process. So we talked it through and realized that they're probably asking one of the five commonly asked questions that salespeople, you know, the buyers ask. Love Marcus Sheridan's book, They Ask, You Answer, and it talks about what questions you need to ask. So he was able to brainstorm those and put a landing page on his website in Chinese, and he said, this is such a great idea. Why don't I do it in some more languages? So he became an accidental exporter. That's what they're calling it these days, where you do a little translation on your website, you pay attention to your statistics and where people are coming in from, do the translation, and encourage more business to come in. So
okay.
If you compare that to a manufacturer that might have to have a distributor on the ground, that's a different kind of thing. You've got to think about how you're going to find that distributor, what information you're going to provide to them, how you're going to provide information for them to sell, what currency are you going to use. You've got all the logistics of getting products in and out. So with that, you can certainly start with your website and see what kind of interest you get because that's what's happening. Or you can start by going down to the state trade office and having them help you build out your expansion strategy. And I recommend picking a country that makes sense and don't do it in an English-speaking country because everybody else is going to the English-speaking countries, so you have more competition. Pick one, do a little translation, and you get a much higher return on your investment. And so they can help you find distributors, make the connections, and build out your strategy, you know, and then, you know, and find the other support networks. Now, I have a whole network of people in global trade, so if anybody listening wants access to any kind of provider, I've got them. So, and then I've heard people saying, I interviewed this guy for my podcast yesterday, so the episode hasn't launched yet, but he owns Singing Dog Vanilla. Fascinating story. He supports the vanilla farmers. Pardon?
That's great.
Have you? Yeah, yeah. And apparently
that's
in Indonesia, there is a singing dog. And so he wanted to support small, sustainable farms and bring the product around the world. So his story is fascinating about how he did it. He started in more of a global situation. And he has a friend that does global business, and the friend said, no, actually, it was him. The friend was a different story. He said, I'm going to expand to New Zealand because I want to go hiking and surfing in that country. So it was the business owner drove where he wanted to go. Yeah, so there's all sorts of different reasons about where people expand to.
So,
and I love
Someone has a question for Wendy about translations or marketing to non-English speaking audiences. The phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. So do you think there's a huge opportunity, or is like the global market saturated? Like everyone's already doing business with everyone else. Like you said, the English speakers, I mean, is it better to just focus on the non-English speaking audience in the U.S., or is there still plenty of opportunities abroad?
Oh, well, in the beginning of the book, I talk about the different opportunities and how you can look at it. I mean, you can look at pure population. The U.S. has less than 5% of the global population. I think I have my numbers right. And, you know, it's small. And so if you look at that way, and then you can look at GDP, and whereas we used to be dominant before, the margin is shrinking there. You can look at purchasing power parity, which is how much does it cost to buy something in another country? Like chicken is a lot cheaper in India than it is here. You can look at disposable income. And across all these metrics, the U.S. used to be very, very strong comparing to the 1950s to now, to what's projected in the future. The rest of the world is gaining in wealth, and they want U.S. goods. I had lunch the other day with a couple in from Peru that he owns a business down there, and they're looking to bring in sustainable consumer products into the South American market. So they're looking for clothes and bags and shoes and everything like that. And they said people love American products, brands, and they like the whole sustainable, you know, good for the environment or doing good. So there's an opportunity. There's a huge opportunity there. So it's products, it's services. Services are the number one export from the U.S.
Interesting.
So no matter.
Okay.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
It is interesting. Wow. You just reminded me when I ran a translation company, I was telling you that the CEO of Prada came to New York and they called us and asked for a translator. They wanted a consecutive. And maybe before I ask the next question, maybe you can tell people the difference in interpreters, translator, consecutive or simultaneous.
Yes, so interpreting is spoken, and so a consecutive interpreter would repeat everything the speaker says. So if I say something in English, the interpreter would say it in Portuguese, and then Ted would reply in Portuguese, and then the interpreter would say it in English to me. A simultaneous interpreter is somebody who you would picture at the back of the UN where they're wearing a headset, they're listening to a speaker, and it's real time. As information is coming into their ear, they're saying it in another language, you know, out their mouth. So it's live, it's fast, and they have special training for that. And it's you know, so you understand with simultaneous interpreters that they'd need special training on how to do that. But consecutive interpreters do too. So, Ted, talk about the problems you can run into if you just pick any bilingual person to do your interpreting.
Oh, I heard a story about Braniff Airlines, and I guess they said, oh, we have someone here who speaks Spanish and English. Let her translate. And they had this. They were proud of their slogan, which was "Fly in leather seats." Like, yeah, now we're gonna go market in South America that you can fly in leather seats and fly back to the U.S. And they did that. They put a slogan that said, fly in leather, it's vuelo en cuero. Well, what they didn't factor, I think it was Ecuador and maybe some other countries, definitely in Ecuador, vuelo en cuero means fly in the nude. So it has, I mean, everyone knows that it has both meanings, and some will know, oh, it's cuero, it's nude, and they might use a different word. They may know cuero is leather, but in some places they only use it as nude. And so now you're doing a slogan, and come get on Braniff Airlines, and you can fly in a nude. And you can imagine that didn't do well.
Right. That's exactly the problem. If somebody doesn't know the hidden meanings behind it, you can run into a real problem.
You were saying saudade. Like, yeah, in English we have that too, where you have or... I don't want to run off in Dominican Republic and all the things they say there, or Mexico. But there are lots of things where there are meanings where you just miss it if it's not someone who really knows, who has the training. Like you were talking about training for consecutive or simultaneous interpreters, you also get training to be a translator. Most people don't realize the sort of pedigree. You know, I've seen translators, even interpreters, but translators who had an undergrad in engineering, a master's in like biochemical engineering, and then they went to law school and practiced intellectual property, and then they went to school some point to be a translator. So, you know, those are highly educated people who have deep knowledge in when it comes to subject matter.
Right. Oh, yes. The translators that I have the same impression of the translator, that just highly educated, pay close attention to detail, and have the same skills as a very good writer to be able to translate
right.
it, and then they're fully bilingual. And then the interpreters, it's interesting, too, because they're running around, you know, they might be at doctor's appointments or with lawyers or, you know,
court,
you know, helping facilitate.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, a business meeting. And you think, oh, any bilingual person can do it because they just hear it and they repeat it. But there's so much more about, you know, ethics in the profession and how to stand and how to present and how to ask for clarification if you don't understand. And, you know, so they go through heavy-duty training to be able to do that, too.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say that right now we're kind of talking about some of the blind spots when it comes to language, right? It's not just a matter of language, right? Vuelo and cuero can have more than one meaning. And also, if you're translating a legal document, you want someone who has the legal training, but you may not use the same person to translate a poem or some marketing material.
Exactly right. Exactly. If we're doing a patent translation from English to Spanish, it's going to be a different resource than if we're doing marketing translation, even if it's the same language pair. You know, it's just like you wouldn't have your engineer write your marketing materials, then you're not going to have
right.
your marketing person write your technical documentation. It's just a different style, different set of vocabulary, different messaging. So you've got to have, it's so much more than just the language.
So you've been in the industry for a while, and the U.S. being a superpower, perhaps a lot of people believe, well, the English is the global language, and you don't even have to bother with this. Like, and especially, so there's two ways to look at that. English is the global language, so everyone in the world will speak English. And if you're doing business in the U.S. to a non-English speaking audience, some people may think, well, you know, I don't care. You should just learn English. And they may be second generation, and and their English is not perfect, then they may be more comfortable. And I, you know, talk about that. Like, you know, people think English is the global language, and then you have the dilemma of non-English speakers in the U.S.
Okay. So do you know what the official language is of the United States?
It should be English,
Spanish?
Right? Don't tell me it's Spanish already. It's English.
There is no official language. There's no official language of the United States. Isn't that priceless? So for all the people who say English, you should speak English if you come to the United States, there is no should in there because it's not even the official language. And plus, if we didn't learn all these other languages and have all these different cultures, that we'd never have Pizza Friday and Taco Tuesday and lasagna and, you know, mushu pork, you know, all these delightful things in our culture. Cinco de Mayo, although that is kind of an American holiday.
It sure is. Mexicans don't celebrate it.
No, they don't. But, you know, it sure is a fun one here. So, you know, you should speak English in the United States. I think we need to get over that. People speak different languages, and it brings so much more in. And we have lots of words. We have so many words in English that came from other languages. So it just expands your horizon. Now, for doing business internationally, you can get away with a lot of English. Like if you're going to go work with a distributor, oftentimes they will speak English well enough to do light conversations with you. Most of the time they're not going to have the in-depth English understanding to do your translations. There's a whole section of that in the book about who does your translation. Yet many companies think that we just do business in English, we don't need to translate. But they're missing out because all the statistics show that even if people speak English as a second language and you think you're conversing with them fine, they would still rather read in their native language. 90% of the people who are bilingual English would prefer to spend time on a website in their language. Over 70% will spend more time consuming information. Well over half will spend more money if they have access to information in another language. And so all the research shows that it's fine that you do your preliminary or you're speaking with your connections there, but if you really want to sell and connect with people, you have to translate your materials. Now, there's new research that came out after I published the book that even shows that 75% of the people who bought in English won't buy again if you don't provide after-sales support in their language. So it's really, really important as you take people through the buyer's journey that you're providing content in material that they can actually read and trust and understand.
Okay, very good. Good. Lori, questions you'd like to ask her? Or anything you'd like to ask her? We're coming to a close here, so.
Right. No, I think, it was good. It was informative. I think we have another avenue for you to gain business.
Great. Well, I'm happy to help anyone figure it out or point them to resources.
Yeah, I mean, to have an interpreter on Zoom and know where to go to get one is huge. So, even for counseling, clients, because I counsel clients and a lot of times they don't speak English or, that's a big deal when you have someone who knows and understands and cares. So,
are you still doing counseling?
I am.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought you would transition completely to interior design. You're a woman of many talents.
Many talents. Yeah, no, during COVID, a lot of people needed assistance.
And
yeah.
I had offered, I think it was the governor or I don't know, whatever governor we had at any point. But they had reached out and asked for people who would, you know, volunteer their services. And, you know, I'm still active. I still keep my licenses. And, of course, I was like, you know, people need help now. It's such a trying time. And anxiety, depression, abuse, you know, any sort of thing. So I've been pretty active.
Wow, I'm so glad to hear that because that's been such a crisis with access to resources all over the place. So, yeah,
exactly.
I'm glad to hear you stepped in to help.
Well, thank you. Thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you have two good target markets. Let's get you some more business. And where does someone go to find
you?
You?
I guess... Well, I love Linktree. I don't know if you know Linktree yet, but it's a place where you can put all your connections, so whatever people hang out, they can go to. So it's linktr.ee. So it's like Linktree, but there's dot before the two E's, / Wendy Pees, W-E-N-D-Y, P as in Peter, E-A-S-E. So it's like peas and carrots with the E at the end. And if you go there, you can get a couple free chapters of the book. You can click through to order it. You can follow me on any of the social media platforms to get the fun language and culture tidbits. And, of course, you can find our website if you want more information about Rapport International and our language services.
Awesome. Very, very cool. And very useful.
I don't know if you can do this quickly, but are you working on anything special now that's different?
Yes. I actually got the second book in the works. I'm co-writing one with Hannah Penns, and it's going to be, like, this one's more in-depth, more research, but we're going to take some episodes from the podcast and do a shorter, pithier book, kind of in the one-minute manager who moved my cheese style about global communications or, you know, I don't know what we'll call it.
Well,
so we've got
awesome.
That in the works right now. Yeah.
Very
every
cool.
reading style we want to capture.
And just for our listeners, and if they want to know, do you sleep?
Oh, yeah. I'm a really good sleeper. I mean, yeah, I've been inside for COVID, so I've been, you know, I launched a podcast, wrote a book, but, once we can get back to socializing, I'll be doing that more. But, yeah, no, I definitely love my sleep. Very healthy for your mental health, right? Very good for your mental health, I guess
absolutely.
Is what I wanted to say.
At least that's what the rumor says.
Wendy, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure.
I've enjoyed this so much.
Aw, thank you so much.
And I learned from you about the... I was just saying, I learned from you about the international interior design market, so I'm glad you educated me. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
It was our pleasure. Thank you, Wendy. I'm so glad you accepted the invitation, and wish you much success.
Thank you, Ted, and I'm so glad that we had a chance to meet through Clubhouse.
Absolutely. So, everyone, thanks for joining us.
All you Apple users. Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us, everyone, our listeners. Our intent, as we do every week, is that you learn something from an expert, and surely we have one. If you don't, tell them the name of your book again.
The Language of Global Marketing.
Perfect. Great. And that's not just for doing business abroad, as we talked about. It's for doing business with non-English speakers right here in the U.S. or Puerto Rico or someplace like that. So thanks for joining us, everyone. Have a great evening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, and don't forget to donate. Have a great week. Bye-bye.